I'd like now to welcome Houston Johansson. He is a member of the Santa Fe Charter Review Commission and is here to talk about the municipal charter and the proposed amendments, which all of us here in Santa Fe who go out and vote on March 4th or before will be given the choice to vote on. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte. It's great to be here.
So what is the Santa Fe Charter? Why is it continually reviewed? What's going on?
So the Santa Fe Charter can best be thought of as the constitution of the city. It basically lays out the foundation and the framework of how the municipal government will function, the powers that the different parts of government will have, and it is reviewed on a regular basis. I should say the charter mandates that we have a review commission appointed at least every 10 years or sooner. And the reason being is that, you know, things change, issues come up, and it's important that this be a living document. We don't want it to become overburdened and too complex, but it is a living document that over time needs to evolve as the city evolves. So that's why we had a review commission that was convened at the end of 2012.
And what you came up with was that a lot of the city charter is looking pretty good, but you proposed 9 amendments.
Yes, we sent, we sent 8 amendments to the city council. There was an extra one that was added that had to do with, you know, stating our belief that we should have an entrepreneurial spirit here in Santa Fe and that everyone should make a living wage. So the council did expand it slightly, and some of the amendments we sent to them, they revised, and that's common policy. The commission is appointed. They work very hard to come up with recommendations based upon public input. It is then sent to the council. Council is free to do what they want with it. I think to their credit, they did a good job of finding some good balances in some issues we sent them, and then they hand that over to the voters. And in this case, it will be on the ballot, as you said, on the 4th.
And so let's go through these amendments. Some of them we can go through pretty quickly because they're really not binding. Like, for example, water protection and conservation. So that would mandate the governing body to protect, preserve, and enhance the city's water resources through regulation, conservation, etc. That's kind of a no-brainer.
Well, so the way the charter works, just to back up a second, is there are parts of it that are called policy statements. These are not legally binding amendments. They are more principles of statement that we as a community believe in. We heard from, you know, various groups who came to testify to us that they felt that having something in this amendment about water, it was an environmental one, would be helpful. Again, it's not legally binding. Really what these first three, I should say, are all policy statements. And really what they do is, while they're not legally binding, they would give someone ammunition down the road to go fight for something. So if we had a situation where a council and a mayor were attempting to undermine protections for water or just open the floodgates to unbridled development, those who went to fight that could say, look, in the charter, I understand it's not legally binding, but our principles, our statements of conscience say that we believe in protecting water resources, and you can't, you know, do these insane things and just let the floodgates open. So they do have a value to them, even if they don't cause immediate bureaucratic or legal changes.
And so another one of those is neighborhood preservation, which basically says that we should have a policy on neighborhood preservation. And the third one is support for local businesses, local economy, and a living wage for all.
Yeah, absolutely. And as I said, the one about the living wage was added by the council. I think it's a fine amendment. You know, it's a good statement of principle. I think we do believe in all that. It's now enshrined in a document. And, of course, it could be changed by the next review commission. I somehow doubt it will be. But, again, this all just gives ammunition to anyone who had to go fight for these issues. So if we ever, again, had a mayor council that was threatening neighborhoods or was going after the living wage, those who stood up against could say, look, the voters approved this basic underlying principle, and for you to go against it will go against the will of all those who voted to put it there.
And you can't turn my entire neighborhood into a film set.
Exactly.
Okay, now, Charter Amendment 4 is Independent Citizens Redistricting Commission. Why is that considered important?
Well, so the way it works currently, and the way it works in a lot of parts of the country, is politicians are the ones that actually get to do the redistricting. And that's, so, you know, when we redistrict, we change where district lines are, where election lines are going to be, and politicians, not always, but politicians, if they're in charge of it, have the ability to do what's called gerrymandering, where you change district lines to change populations and demographic makes up to favor one kind of party or one politician. And this happens all over. I mean, Texas is the biggest example. They constantly are redistricting out there. Every time they see a demographic shift, they switch the lines around, and suddenly, you know, a county or a district that looked like it might go blue is now going red because they changed the district lines.
Right.
We felt, and we heard a lot of testimony about this, especially from Common Cause, that we should take this power out of the politicians' hands and give it to an independent body so that we take the politics out of it, so that those redistricting lines, which has to happen every 10 years when the census comes out, are based truly on population changes, not what politician you want to get elected. And California passed an amendment like this a few years ago, and there is evidence that suggests since they did this, their government has gotten less dysfunctional. So I think this is a really good amendment. I think, you know, it won't be perfect. You know, of course, there will always be ways that politicians can slip in their own opinions and slip in their own biases, even if it's an independent system. But this gives us at least a buffer between those who have to run for office and those who have to live under those who win.
The next charter amendment is about campaign contribution limits.
Yeah, so we already have contribution limits in the city laws. We passed those. We may need to reform some of those, you know, after this election. But what we were worried about is, you know, if in 10 years we had a council and mayor who said, you know, we don't want to get rid of these. We want to just open the floodgates to money. They could do so. They could just undo these ordinances. So by putting this in here, we're creating a backstop. If anybody attempted to dismantle meaningful contribution limits in the city, they would be fighting against the charter, and the charter is the foundation of government, so they could not do that. And it would give a lot of ammunition to those of us who would go fight against those. So I'm not anticipating any politician in this town going against them, but we want to make sure that that opportunity never occurs, especially in an era like Citizens United, where, you know, the courts have been very favorable to just money pouring into elections. We felt it necessary to have a backstop against that.
Charter Amendment 6 is about timely disclosure of the purpose of tax increases or bond measures. What's that about?
Well, so we had a lot of testimony, and I'm sure anyone who's paid attention to city government or bond issuing understands that the city is not always as clear or as timely about telling us what they're going to do with this new money. And, you know, that is frustrating for those of us who go and vote for bonds or tax increases, that we don't always know exactly how the money will be used. We don't know how quickly it will be used. And, you know, you run the risk that you approve a bond, and then because it's so vague what was going to happen to it, the city does something else with that money, or it just sits there for a long time, not doing anything. So we wanted to create a mechanism by which if the city wanted to do a bond issuing or increase taxes for whatever reason, that they would disclose very, you know, upfront and in a timely way what that money was going to be used for, why it was going to be used that way, and make it very clear to us so that we're not just handing over essentially a blank check, you know. No longer, if this passes, would you just have a bond that says, you know, this is for quality of life. You would have to really explain what that's going to mean and what that's going to look like. And I think that's really important for us as taxpayers.
I think it's interesting, too. I mean, when you have a bond that says for parks, it's not really, I mean, it's not spelled out for us, and it's not really spelled out at all how that's going to be used once the bond is approved.
Absolutely. I mean, not only is it not spelled out well, but even if there are documents inside City Hall that explain it, they're hard to find. You know, anyone who's gone down to try to get information out of the city likely has run into roadblocks. And I'm not saying anyone is intentionally hiding anything. It's just the nature of the beast down there. I would like that all to be out in the open much earlier so that we can, yeah, if it's going to be for parks, exactly which parks it's going to help, how it's going to help those parks, and how quickly that money will be spent. Because, you know, even at the state level, we issue bonds and it takes, you know, a year or more for the money to do anything. So having these disclosures up front will make, it won't fix it completely, but it will make us, it will allow us to make much more informed decisions and then also hold people accountable if that money starts getting misused.
The 7th charter amendment is called Independent Audit Committee. This sounds like independent redistricting, another independent thing. Same idea?
Very similar, and we already do, again, have an independent audit committee. What we wanted to make sure is that nobody could undo that. And it is important that, you know, the finance of the city, I mean, that's one of the number one things that should be taken care of. You know, the book should be clean, should be very clear where all the money is, where it's come from, how it's been spent, who touched it. We have this committee in place to do this independent audit, to look at it from an external perspective. We want to make sure that no one can take that away from us.
The next amendment, so that was 1 through 7, and a lot of those, I think, for probably most of our listeners, are pretty much like, sounds like a good idea, not very controversial, and I don't think there was a whole lot of controversy in the process over those those first ones that we've read. Well, some of them were added later, but is that correct?
Yeah, there wasn't a ton of controversy. Well, I should say, currently I don't hear anyone really talking negatively about 1 through 7 whatsoever. And even in our deliberations, there wasn't a lot of controversy around it. There was some controversy on the policy statements in that we were so because it's the Constitution, you don't want it to become too long and crazy, and you don't want everything to be in there that everybody's wanted, because then it becomes kind of a useless document.
Right.
So there was some hesitation on some of our parts to not just open the floodgates to endless policy statements. And we did reject some of those. We tried to find ones that were seemed to have broad support, made sense, and were going to make the charter too convoluted. And then on these other ones, we had a lot of back and forth about whether they were needed, because we already had certain things in place like the audit committee, but it was not a deeply controversial issue. It was more about, is this the right mechanism to do this?
So we're talking to Houston Johansson about the proposed charter amendments that we will be voting on Election Day or before. And there's two more that are perhaps a little more controversial. I don't know about Amendment 8, which basically says that the mayor can vote.
Yeah, so Amendment 8, at one point Amendment 9 and Amendment 8 were sort of one big block. They were split up later, and I think that was a wise decision because 9 is certainly more controversial than 8, and, you know, I wouldn't want somebody who likes the idea that the mayor can vote and everything to have to vote against that because they had some other issues with Amendment 9. But basically what 8 says is the mayor at this, you know, currently the mayor can only vote in the event of a tie. This will allow the mayor to vote on all issues. And the reason we felt that was important is, you know, for better or for worse, the mayor really is the only member of the elected body that has a true citywide mandate and purview. I do accept that councilors try to have a citywide purview, but because of where they're elected from, they're going to have a more district-oriented mindset. So allowing a mayor to vote on all issues will make sure that a citywide purview is always brought to the table, and it also makes sure that the mayor is held accountable in explaining him or herself on all kinds of issues. You know, we elect a mayor, and they usually have broad platforms, lots of ideas, but they don't always have to be accountable for them because they're not able to vote on a lot of things. This will make sure that the mayor can hopefully execute more of his or her agenda, and also that we can hold him or her more accountable for their agenda.
So this is interesting because, I mean, we've got 8 city councilors, 2 from each of the 4 districts. So right now, if you have a 4-4 tie, the mayor votes anyway.
That is correct.
And right now, if you have a 5-3 vote, let's say, if the mayor were to vote, it might be 6-3 or it might be 5-4, but it wouldn't actually change the outcome of the vote.
I think in many cases it's not going to have a true impact on what passes, because exactly, you just ran through some excellent scenarios. Again, I think it's important, and we at the Charter Commission felt it was important that the mayor's voice be heard on all issues, and this will allow him or her to do that, and also to make sure that we know where they stand on things and be able to hold them more accountable. You know, if I don't have to vote on something, it's much easier to duck issues around it. Oh, well, I was supportive of that, but I'm not allowed to vote on it, so I didn't. This means that they will have, I mean, of course you can recuse yourself, but this will up the ante and mean that they will likely vote on more things, will be able to hold them more accountable, and hopefully give the mayor more ability to execute his or her agenda than they currently have.
So now let us go to the somewhat more controversial Charter Amendment 9, which has a lot of different pieces of it, but basically, among other things, it establishes the mayor as a full-time position with a somewhat higher salary than the mayor is getting now.
Yeah, so this definitely was the most controversial thing we dealt with. We heard quite a bit of testimony on it. It actually was in the enabling language of the resolution that was passed creating the Charter Commission that we would look at this issue of having a full-time mayor. You know, I'll start out by saying the dissenters on the commission were concerned about potential corruption that could come out of strengthening the mayor. And I'll be the first to admit that this amendment is by no means perfect, and do I think it's going to get rid of all corruption? Absolutely not. But I do believe that what we presented and then the changes that the council made have limited that potential in a very nice way. So, you know, we heard testimony. I mean, Mayor Koss was a very interesting one to hear from. He said, the only reason that I can be mayor, essentially, is because I've got a state pension plan. I am full-time. Even though I'm not paid that way, I essentially am at City Hall 40-plus hours a week every week. And I think that's what citizens expect out of their mayor. You know, there was a time probably back in the 80s or the 70s when a mayor could be more hands-off and spend more of his or her time out at the golf course or something like that. But we're in a much more complicated environment nowadays. We have a $320 million budget. We have a 1,500-person workforce. We have, you know, 82,000 people in the city, and we're facing challenges that, even if they're similar to what they used to be, they're way more complex and way more difficult to tackle. And I think citizens are frustrated when they find out that the mayor is as limited right now as he or she is. So we attempted to sort of bring the mayor in line with expectations, bring the mayor's powers and payment in line with what he or she is essentially already doing. And by allowing the mayor to, you know, appoint and then remove key members in the city's administration.
Well, that's the other part of it. There's another part to this charter amendment, which is the mayor basically supervises the city manager, city attorney, city clerk, and can suspend and fire those people without the city council's approval.
That is correct. The way it currently works is only the council can remove any of these individuals.
Now, will the council still be able to remove those people?
Yes. And this was the balance that the council wisely struck. The original one we sent to council only gave that authority to the mayor. What the council voted on was they would take it from a simple majority to a supermajority. So they would need 6 votes to remove a city manager that was acting in an inappropriate way. But now the mayor would also have a similar power. And I think this actually creates a lot of oversight and accountability. Rather than just one group of people having the ability to remove someone who may be acting inappropriately, we now have 2 groups of people who can look at the staff and say, oh, this person isn't doing the right thing. They're acting in a corrupt way or a dishonest way, or they're acting in an illegal way. And either one of those groups now has the ability to remove that problem individual. And these are super critical importance. Position. I mean, the city manager essentially runs the city day to day. And if you have a manager in there that, you know, can't work with the mayor, that's a problem. If you have a city manager that's going behind the council and doing things the council hasn't voted on, that's a problem. Now we have 2 points of control over that. And by giving the mayor that ability, we really can make sure that he or she can have a real team that can work with him or her to carry out their agenda and the policies that the council sets forth.
Now, there's a few more items in the 9th charter amendment. Can you talk about them? We're sort of getting to the end of our time here.
Sure, sure. So the other ones definitely become less controversial. I think the pay increase we've talked about, and I think, of course, the removal of key staff are certainly the most controversial. The other ones have to...
Now, the pay increase, I would just like to say, pay increase as a percentage of the entire city budget is like 0.0001. It's not significant.
It's very small. And, you know, you'll notice that the council, for their reasons, put in the number 74,000. That number eventually will change as the independent salary setting commission is established. And it's also important to note that none of this will kick in Amendment 9 until 2018. And
right.
The reason we did that is we were in the midst of an election and we didn't want anyone running for mayor and not knowing what their job description would be.
Right.
The other ones are definitely less controversial, though. I mean, there's this whole provision about, you know, requiring the mayor to create a budget and set forth a legislative agenda. I don't think anyone finds that to be a bad idea. At least I haven't heard anyone say they think that's a bad idea. And again, it makes sense. You know, the mayor is our figurehead. The mayor is elected by the city. They should set out an agenda for the council to take up, and they should propose a budget. And then the council should take that up, and if they don't agree with it, amend it to something they like. But at least it's a starting point each year for us to move an agenda forward.
Houston Johansson is a member of the Santa Fe Charter Review Commission, and we've been talking about the proposed charter amendments that, ladies and gentlemen, we will have the opportunity to vote for on the 4th of March. Thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.